It's 7 p.m.
It's
Thursday,
right.
And this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian
wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the French. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, Lavinia is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushion Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Yeah.
It is Thursday, I think I'm on, yeah, it is Thursday, December the 8th, just after 7 p.m. right now. It is 7.02 p.m. here in Florida on the, it's Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m., December the 8th, and this is we're live right now. However, Ron is not going to be with us this evening. Every year for about the last 8 years, he goes to a local college or university, and it's around this time of year. They have an alcohol awareness program, and they usually do that before all the kids leave for winter break. And he's always been there to talk about wines and do a presentation there. And this particular year, they happen to schedule it on Thursday, which is the All About Wine Show Day, and it's a kind of a big event. I mean, they have to cut it at about 150 students, and there's always more that want to attend this presentation. So he is over. I forgot what the college was. Was it Eckerd College down there in St. Pete or something? But so he's not here, but it is for a good reason. And yes. So. Hopefully we will have a definite live show next Thursday. I'm usually the guy who just sits in the background and does the production stuff and does the different sound effects and things like that. So, you know, that's my job here. Yeah, thank you. But this time I have to kind of hold the reins myself and just kind of – what we're going to do a best of is what we're going to do. And we've been doing that for the past couple of, not last week, but a week before last, I think there was a best of that we pulled from, and one of our first shows, one of the first shows ever, it was when it was called Ask Ron. It was on another network. We started way back in 2009, and was it March 2009, February 2009, somewhere around there. And so I ran a best of back then, and we're kind of in a holiday schedule, so things are going to be a little different. You know, we may try and schedule a show every week, but due to the holidays, it's going to be difficult because of where the holidays fall, and things are just, you know, coming up that you know, people need to attend, and just like this, and so, you know, we may have to make other arrangements, and we may skip a Thursday, you never know. But so far we've been doing pretty good, and throwing these best ofs as I'm listening to them, it's like, oh, that's a good show. So, and they have been. So it's cool to do a best of and take a look back at the show way back then. Tonight's show, let me see what else. Oh, I do have an announcement about what's coming up this Saturday at the winery, so I'll be running that first. But tonight's show, just to let you all know, is from May 2009, and that was, of course, when it was called Ask Ron. Let's see. But there were different topics, and Ron was he's discussing it's kind of like a mixture of different topics related to wine, as the show always is related to wine in some way, and how it affects the wine industry. And the terms and the information that we learned tonight off of the show definitely affects the wine process, the taste, and everything. Because tonight, some of the topics, and it's just a small list, terroir. In case you don't know what that is, that's why you tune in. Botrytis, you also want to know what that is. And also Brix, those were three of the main topics. If you don't know what Brix are, stay tuned, because that information is coming up in tonight's Best of program from May 2009. So it was kind of a mixture of different things, and he wanted to throw out some of those terms, you know, to let people know that there are different things going on in the wine and the winemaking process that affects a lot of what winemakers do and you know, the product itself. So we're going to run that tonight. And but there's a big event coming up at the winery, however you want to say it, coming up this weekend, this Saturday. And here's the information on it. I'll be right back to start the Best of show right after this. Stay tuned. Listen to this. This is really cool. What's going on?
This Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's a special event. Join us at the winery for Wine Fest and our 10th anniversary birthday celebration. There will be live music, cake, vendors, wine, cake, door prizes, and did I say cake? Bring the whole family and enjoy the celebration and a great day at the winery. It's Florida Estates Winery's 10th anniversary birthday celebration and Wine Fest. This Saturday, December 10th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. For more information, call the winery at 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. See you Saturday.
That sounded like a bad tape, did it? It sounded like on mine, like a bad reel-to-reel or an A-track just went nuts. Anyway, happy birthday, Florida Estates Winery, started December 2001. What a great... Wow. Anyway, what a... Thank you. Just fantastic. December 2001 was when Florida Estates Winery opened in Land O'Lakes, 25241 State Road 52. Be there this Saturday for the celebration. It was 10 years ago this week, that the winery opened. And, wow, it's just been great. And we are coming up on our own little anniversary here, but it's not nearly as important as the Florida Estates Winery. So, all right, let's go ahead and play this this clip here. This is going to be 54 minutes, and you want to stay tuned because not a lot of people know what all those terms mean, and it's going to be presented to you right now from Ron and myself. You'll kind of hear how the show sounded way back then. Also, it's there's a lot of it's just different, different than what it is now. So bear with that part of it, and you'll learn a lot tonight on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. This is Mike, and I'll be back in the last few minutes. So we may run over a little bit in the archives, so because this is only 60 minutes, but we're about 51 minutes left in the show, and it's 54 and a half minutes of the clip. So yeah, we'll be a little bit late. If not, we'll see you all next Thursday. Stay tuned to the All About Wine show on Facebook for more updates and information. That is facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. All About Wine BTR. BTR stands for Blog Talk Radio. If you just go to that link, log into Facebook, go to that facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. You can like us on there, and Ron posts information quite a bit, actually, whenever shows are scheduled or going to be scheduled, with full information on who's there and different comments and things like that. And it's good to interact with us there, and we really appreciate that if you'd like us on there. So we know you're listening, because there's a lot of listeners out there, and we know a lot of people are on Facebook, so like us on Facebook, and stay tuned with the program that way as well. All right, let's get the clip rolling before we run way too off. And again, from May 2009, this was from the Ask Ron segment, covering different topics on the wines, what affects the wines and the wine industry as a whole. This is it. I'll see you all in about 54 minutes. All right, let's go.
And here we are with the wine segment. Been looking forward to this. I was like, yes. I mean, you have some big things going on there this weekend, and here we are. So this is cool. So how's it going? Here's Ron. I don't have the clapping noise, but let me see if I can. Here we go. Nope, that ain't it.
Gong. Gong. Okay. Give me a gong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was it. Yeah.
We can do. There you go.
Oh, that was good. They didn't put, you know, they put booze in here, and they put something else, but they didn't put the applause. I thought the applause was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Was this? Okay, there you go.
There you go. That works. Yeah, that'll do it.
That's something. Anyway, that's,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little thing. Okay. No, I was just queuing something up. Okay.
Enough of this frivolity.
Yes. Because people are already listening, going, you know, I don't know, but I
thought this was wine. What are they doing? Yeah.
Yes, and it is. It is actually, but we got off to something else. Yes, this Saturday, man, you've got some major happenings going over there at the winery. This is going to be really good.
We are looking
forward to
this Saturday. Yeah.
Yes, there's going to be. I was reading the emails. For those of you listening out there, definitely subscribe to the email newsletter. They come out pretty much regularly, it looks like, because I'm going through my list here.
Twice a month.
Past ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they go out and they have all the details of everything going on. Yeah. So definitely great, and great to have you back on again Thursday for the show. Do we have a particular topic this evening, or?
I'm just going to throw out a whole bunch of different things here. I'm going to give you, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about lees, and we're going to talk a little bit about terroir and Brett and residual sugar and botrytis and bricks and just a whole bunch of different odds and ends here. Just because these are all terms that people hear about in wine, and I'm just going to, you know, clarify just a short explanation, a short definition, if you will, of a bunch of different terms tonight. We're just going to.
Excellent.
Geek speak, if you will, for a while.
Okay.
And,
well, being a computer person,
catch
I can definitely do this. Yes. Did you say leaves? Like
leaves.
Tree leaves or something?
Leaves. L-E-E-S. Leaves.
Okay.
Leaves.
I'm writing my... Okay. I haven't heard that, but okay. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of, leaves. Absolutely.
Yeah. Lease is a term that you hear every once in a while. It's not used real often there, but it's a term that's thrown around every once in a while.
Okay.
You'll hear I'll have people come into the winery and talk about lees and stuff. A lot of people are making their own wine now. An awful lot of people are making their own wine, and I've had people ask me about lees. So, but one of the things: terroir, residual sugar, Brett, botrytis. Just like I say, we're gonna do a little geek speak tonight. We're gonna talk about a whole bunch of different odds and ends. But first, we're gonna talk about the festival this Saturday.
Absolutely.
And we have a saxophonist coming out, John Hughes, who is a saxophonist, played at a whole bunch of different venues around the area. He's been doing sax for quite some time. And he will be out this Saturday doing some jazz, saxophonist jazz, which I'm going to be inside doing tastings. I'm really sad about that. I would love to sit outside and have some wine and listen to him all day.
Yeah.
I might have to turn the job of talking about the wine over to somebody else, and I'll just sit outside and
enjoy
listen.
It. Yeah,
really. It sounds great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we've got that. We've got quite a few vendors signed up for Saturday. A lot of people sent. Sunday is Mother's Day, so we need to keep in mind that if you haven't gotten something from Mommy yet or Grandmommy, then it's a good opportunity to come out to the winery and pick up a bottle of wine for or even hit the vendors and find something out there. So we have a lot of things going on this Saturday out there.
Oh, yeah. It looks busy. I mean, that whole section of the email is it's incredible how many vendors you have out there this time. This is really good. And the weather's going to be great for it, too. So
supposed to be beautiful.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, sounds good. Hopefully. Yeah, we'll definitely have to mention that a couple more times throughout the show here. So good.
Hopefully, we won't get attacked by love bugs. They're starting to come out. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but we're starting to get our semi-annual visit back here on love bugs.
Yep.
So.
My windshield has noticed. Yes.
Yes.
The windshield
so
on the
mine.
Cliff. Yes.
Yes, and it has. So,
okay, great.
But it's not full force yet, so we'll get through this market, and it'll disappear by the time we do the next one. So we're safe,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Okay. Excellent. And that's 10 to 3.
10 to 3. Our musician will be there from 11 to 3, but the
11
vendors will be set up at 10, and they'll be ready at 10. For any of you out there who have attended the winery, have been out to the winery, you know that we've had Lorena work with us in the past, and Lorena is going to have a little girl coming up Wednesday. It's scheduled to be delivered Wednesday, so we are all excited in the fact that we're going to have another baby in the family and a future wine drinker. So.
Keep in mind, folks, that this was from May 2009, so that's not what is happening this weekend. This is from 2009, so don't listen to this part. Okay, now I should speed up here. Hold on a second. Let me go back to the program.
Just stuff to talk about. Unless there's something else you want to say before I start rattling on here for a while.
Well, I'm going. I was just going on the email just to see. You did mention John Hughes. Let's see. He's been. He's a veteran musician. I think I mentioned that earlier at about 6:40 or so. But when I was doing the first announcement of it. But he's played quite a bit. He teaches saxophone privately. In the Bay Area, and it's going to sound great out there. And then you can do wine tasting out there. You have Dave is going to be back again with the Artisan Writing Instruments. I haven't seen that. I don't know if he was there back in February when I was
beautiful.
There. But
he uses different woods. Yeah. He's got woods from around the world, and he makes pins out of them, and he turns them into just gorgeous writing instruments with different woods and stuff. They're just really beautiful.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And then you're going to have, it looks like, let's see, down here it says Diane's going to be there with, looks like food items, hot dogs,
yes.
Pots, nachos, pickles.
We,
good. That,
yes, we have a food vendor this time. That's just always nice.
Yeah.
So come out with
definitely.
An appetite.
Okay.
Or
and then Avon,
buy a glass of wine and sit outside and have some
that
food
would be good.
And drink your wine.
And wine goes well with food.
Yes, it does. Yes,
it
does.
Goes well in food as well. You can cook
yes,
with it, too. That's good. Let's see. And then you have, Stop by Receive. Georgia is new at the Wine Fest. Okay. Artistic Enhancements, Painted Furniture. That's going to be interesting. And custom pieces.
Again, keep in mind, this particular part of the clip, which wasn't edited out for some reason. This is from the Wine Fest that was back in May 2009, not December 10th, 2011. So this is information from 2009. Okay. All right. I don't know why it wasn't cut out. But we need to get on with the show, so let's go.
Comment about wines, ask about wine. Ron is here, and he can answer anything you throw at him. And if he can't, then I'll be sitting here on Google searching for it. But I'm sure he can answer your questions. It's area code 724.
If we can't find out, we'll let you know.
Yeah, and don't call the phone number because the phone number is not the same either. So anyway, I'll just keep talking over the phone number. This is Mike. We're doing a best of. Unfortunately, that part wasn't edited out. The beginning part of it was, and the end part was, but this part was not supposed to be included in there, unfortunately. So ignore that part and the part about the Wine Fest. There is a Wine Fest this weekend. It's the 10th anniversary of Florida State's winery. So you do want to attend this Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is the time of the Wine Fest. Okay. All right. Let's see if I can put this back up again and let you listen to the rest of the program.
Or I am mean. I can see it. Lees. We were talking about Lees. Lees. L-E-E-S. Lees is the dead or residual yeast that's left and other particles, but dead and residual yeast that's left that are carried to the bottom of the vat after a wine has fermented and aged. When you ferment a wine, you have your yeast in and all that. As you stop the fermentation, you still have this stuff floating in the wine, and it settles to the bottom of the vat. Now, a lot of times this is not picked up because we pull wine off the containers from the top. Now, this is called racking. You take wine not from the bottom of the container but from the middle, and it's called racking, where you pull the wine off. It's just another geek term that we use in the wine industry. And so the racking, you rack the wine off, you pull the wine off, and you leave the lees, or these particles, in the bottom of the vat. Now, some wines are aged on the lees, so that gives a noticeable yeasty aroma and taste. And it's hard to describe what yeasty... bread, uncooked bread, gives you an example of a little bit what yeast. If you've ever smelled dough before it's been cooked, that mm-hmm. type of aroma, that will come out in some wines that have the lees left on it, where it's they're aged with the lees. And then that's going to give you a little bit of a yeasty aroma and taste. It's not real noticeable. It gives you a little bit, just a hint of it. And it's not bad. We can't really say it's a bad smell or a bad taste, but it just it permeates through the wine a little bit more than what you would want it to sometimes. It depends on how much lees are left in it and how strong the lees are. But most of the time it is racked off. So lees is referring to the dead residual yeast that are left at the bottom of the vat after the wine mm-hmm. has been fermented and aged. Now, to clarify this, a lot of times wineries will take egg whites and drop egg whites on the top of a barrel or a vat or a tank or something. And the egg whites are heavier than the wine itself, and they will float down through the wine, picking up all of these particles and precipitants that are in the wine and dragging it down to the bottom, so you have even less. And then when you rack off of it, it is most of the stuff is sitting at the bottom of the wine. This is one method. You can also filter. Filtering can be done to the point where it's extremely small particles that you can filter out, depending on how tight of a filter you want to put in there. But you have to be careful on doing two types of filtering, because you can also start causing a difference in the aromas and taste by filtering too tight. So you have to be careful with how minute your filter is, because if you're not, then again, you could filter out some of the, especially aromas. You can filter out aromas or weaken the aromas. And when you have yourself a nice wine that has some great aromas, you don't want to filter that out. You want to try to get that in there. But lees, that's what lees is. Terroir, this is something else. I think I've mentioned this before, but I want to bring this up again. This is things that people have asked me. In fact, I just had a very nice guy from France in yesterday, and we were talking a little bit about terroir and some French wines in different areas and all that. A very interesting conversation we had. To begin with, there is no English translation of the word terroir. Now, the word is spelled T-E-R-R-O-I-R. Terroir is pronounced. Pronounced T-A-R-E, ter, W-A-H-R, war, terroir. That's how it's pronounced. But there is no English translation to it. It is a French term. And this is, in general, refers to the natural environment of a wine growing area or region or land or vineyard. It's what the land and the climate give to the wine. Now, there is Some say that it also includes with the wine what human input does, such as pruning and irrigation and fermentation process. And other people say it has nothing to do with any human input. It is only things like climate and soil type and topography and nature, basically. And this is what makes the wine so unique. Now, the French are very big on terroir. They have a complete mindset that terroir is really the key to making great wines. And without that, you have lost a lot of the possibilities of the wine. If you start manipulating the soils, if you start manipulating the environment, then you're going to not get the best results from that grape. So the French word terroir is big in the fact that that is what causes the wines to be what it is.
Wow.
In the United States, there's a few winemakers around the country who are pretty sold on terroir, but it's not as strong as it is in France. French winemakers and French vineyards are very strong. There's no doubt that terroir affects wine's overall character, but basically the level of importance is what is debatable. The French say it's fantastic, it's very important. You get some places like Australia, South Africa, New Zealand, and they are much more toward the fact of what the grapes are and what you're doing with them and all that, not so much of the land. So again, it is a debate that's been going on for as long as wine has been made. But that is terroir. Phylloxera. I mentioned this once before, but I want to hit this again quickly here. Phylloxera, it's spelled P-H-Y-L-L-O-X-E-R-I-A. Phylloxera. Phylloxera is an insect, is a grub, an aphid. An insect that attacks the grapevine roots. And in the United States, we've had plantings of grapes that have been growing for centuries. And this is where the phylloxera aphid, if you will, or the phylloxera insect is originally from. Whenever we went to France and got clippings and tried to bring it back to the United States and plant it in the ground, particularly in California, they were dying. And we really couldn't understand the reason for it and what was happening. We dug into the ground and found this insect, this little aphid-like insect attacking the roots on all the French grapevines. And so being smart people that they were, the people in California grafted the French grapevines onto American rootstock, since American rootstock was immune to it. Now, when you graft, let me hit this lightly too, because some people get confused about grafting. When you graft something onto something else, you get not what the roots are, but you get what is above the tree, above the root line, wherever you graft. So you can graft, for example, an apple tree onto an orange rootstock, and you're still going to get an apple tree. Hmm. All the roots do is give you a watering system, gives you nutrition and stuff like that. Basically, just like a human, you can put a different, you can put everything else different in a person and leave the vascular system, leave the blood system, everything the same. It's not going to change that person because you're giving them different blood. You know, if you get transferred blood from a female to a male, that does not mean that he's going to start speaking in a higher voice. It's just simply, the nutrition system, the inside. And this is the way root systems are. When you graft, you are getting just the nutrition from the roots, but the plant itself above ground where you grafted is going to continue to be what it is, what it's started with. So when you do, when they grafted the rootstock onto it, they continued to get the French grapes, but on American rootstock, and there was no problem. But in the 1860s, it was the phylloxera was unwittingly taken over to France, or Europe, actually. And it almost devastated the wine grape population in Europe, most notably in France. But the Americans ran in and said, look, we can help you. You can plant your grapevines on American rootstock, and it's going to be safe. It's not going to cause any problems. So now most of the world's rootstock, or most of the world's grapevines, are planted on American rootstock because phylloxera has been transported around the world. The little side note here that's really interesting, the French at first refused to use American rootstock, and the French government put up a reward of 300,000 francs for the cure for phylloxera, and to this day that has still not been claimed. No one has found a cure for phylloxera.
Wow.
So if anybody does, then I'm sure that the French will find some reason to dispute it. there's basically five major American rootstocks that are used in the world that are the strongest, are the best, that adopt well and everything. About 20 years ago, 25 years ago, California started to get a strain B of phylloxera that was attacking the rootstock, a new strain that was attacking the rootstock in California. And Napa Valley was particularly hard hit. And about 25 years ago, Napa replanted and regrafted a lot of their grapevines because of strain B onto a new rootstock that was immune to the phylloxera. And it stopped it. But when they did that, Napa Valley planted very strongly in Cabernet Sauvignon grapes. So this is why the plantings of Cabernet Sauvignon in Napa now are so much more than they were quite a few years ago, because of the replanting of the grapevines and the grafting of the Cabernet onto it. So, phylloxera is pretty much controlled now. Two countries in the world do not have a problem with phylloxera, and that's Chile is one of them. And Chile has a lot of great wines and all that, and they test constantly to be sure that they are not infected with phylloxera being brought in. They are basically protected from the Andes on the eastern side of the country and the ocean on the west, the Pacific Ocean on the west. So they've been sheltered from phylloxera. But everywhere else has had problems with phylloxera, and they are using American rootstock because of that. But that's a little bit about phylloxera. And again, if anyone wants to know more about it, you can always look it up. It's spelled P-H-Y-L-L-O-X-E-R-A, phylloxera.
Wow. Interesting.
I've had people come in recently, and our Chardonnay, I've described our Chardonnay, two styles of Chardonnay. You can get a very oaky Chardonnay, Asian, American, French, European oak barrels, give you a very oaky aroma, flavor, and taste. Oak and a Chardonnay, California Chardonnays, most of them are very oaked up. Some from Australia are oak, but not as many as you find in California. There is a second style of Chardonnay, is an unoaked Chardonnay, which is a... you don't have that heavy oak. You use stainless steel. You don't put oak in it. You try to keep the fruit-forward flavors in it, bringing out the fruit of the Chardonnay grape and not the oakiness. When you do that, you're going to get a very fruity Chardonnay and not this heavily oak Chardonnay. A lot of people ask me if it's the a buttery Chardonnay. They say, ooh, I love buttery Chardonnays as this one, or I detect a little bit of butter in this and stuff like that. Well, the butteriness taste you get in Chardonnays, and a lot of people, I love a good oaky buttery Chardonnay myself. I think it's just absolutely fantastic. But the buttery Chardonnay comes from a second fermentation. This is called a malolactic fermentation. A malolactic fermentation is a process in the winemaking that softens the flavor of the Chardonnay. It softens the flavor of the acids of the Chardonnays and stuff like this, and this is what gives you the buttery type thing. The malic acid is actually converted over to a lactic acid, and it's there's you know all sorts of bacteria and stuff that add to it, and it's just different strains of bacteria. But a malolactic fermentation usually begins after the primary fermentation, and once the sugar is converted to alcohol, the bacteria for the malolactic fermentation is added to the wine to start the process. And then it goes and ferments a second time. It enhances the wine. It creates a balance of the wine. Less acidic taste, a fuller, buttery mouthfeel and all that. Very pleasant, very nice. You will spend more for a Chardonnay that has had a second fermentation, obviously, because it's more time and more effort and more energy. They're usually done in a medium to full-bodied wines. You can do a malolactic fermentation to dry reds as well as white wines. It doesn't have to be just a Chardonnay. Most people associate it with a Chardonnay because that's where they hear it most, and that's what they associate it with most. But it can be done with red wines as well as whites. And most of the time, too, it's done in areas where you're going to have a cooler wine, a cooler growing region, because the malolactic fermentation tends to soften the acidity. In a cooler growing region, you get a higher acid level, so the malolactic will soften that acid and give you a nice, softer, buttery-type taste. But that, again, a short thing on malolactic fermentation. Brix, this is something that people are always asking me about. In fact, it's funny how people come in and ask me. Brix is just our cool wine way of saying sugar. We in the wine business don't like to speak like everybody, so we say things like Brix when we really mean sugar. B-R-I-X. That's the sugar content of grapes. This is basically what it is. And whenever we talk about Brix, we talk about degrees. We'll say this has 8 degrees of Brix. Well, again, because we're cool and wine people, really that only means that is 8% sugar.
Okay.
So whenever you ask, yeah, you know, it's just like I say, we're cool, so we talk different. And so, but whenever you ask somebody how much sugar is in this, they'll say, well, it's about 8% about 8 degrees Brix or whatever. And when you do that, what the 8 degrees Brix is really saying is this is 8% residual sugar. This is the amount of sugar. Now, before I go into Brix, let me jump over and talk about residual sugar a little bit. Now, this is something too. If I'm going to talk about Brix, you need to understand residual sugar also. Residual sugar is the amount of sugar left in the wine after fermentation. See, during fermentation, the yeast feeds on the sugar. Science 101. Sugar turns to alcohol. Okay, you know, and carbon dioxide. That's why you home winemakers out there put the balloon on top of your little carboy when you're making wine, and as the balloon blows up, you know it's ready because it's turning to carbon dioxide and it's blowing up the balloon. So the sugar is converting the yeast to alcohol. The yeast is converting the sugar to alcohol and carbon monoxide. So any remaining sugar after it is finished fermenting is called the residual sugar, or what's left sugar, or this is what's done sugar. I mean, you know, so residual sugar is the sugar that is in the wine. So whenever anyone says how much sugar is in this, we always say, well, it's like 8% residual sugar, which really is for saying it's 8% of the sugars that's left over after fermentation, and that's what's left in the wine.
Okay.
Now, a high sugar level could be from the growing conditions, varietal, late harvest, botrytis, from freezing and dehydrating the grapes, during winemaking, adding alcohol, sugar, and unfermented musk can increase the residual sugar. There's all sorts of ways you can increase the residual sugar. All of it natural. You're not adding a bunch of, you know, cubes of sugar or sweetener or something to it. But it's just all natural. So this is residual sugar. Now, some wine producers list the residual sugar on the bottle. And what they do is they list it in grams per liter. And if you see residual sugar, 8 GL, that's grams per liter. And so just to give you an idea of what to look at, dry wines typically have less than 2 grams per liter of residual sugar, while off-dry wines are around no more than 18, from, say, 2 to 18. That's, you know, semi-dry. Sweet wines can be as high as 50 to 100 grams per liter of residual sugar, or even higher, depending on what type of wine they are. Most wineries don't list that because it's just going to be something else that they have to explain. And if we start listing, right, the government will probably jump in there and start finding things that we really have to do with it. So it's best to keep the government out and not list it.
Right.
So that's
right.
What residual sugar is. Residual sugar is the sugar that's left over after fermentation. I don't have to get that, so we can keep going. So let's go back to Brix now. Since I explained residual sugar, let me go back to Brix. Okay, so a Brix is the measurement that we use to describe the sugar content of grapes or must or wine or anything. I mean, it's used for everything. It's this is how much. It is basically what we're saying is the ratio of sucrose to water expressed in degrees. So what we're saying is the ratio of sucrose, or sucrose is sugar, to water. So one Brix equals 1% sugar. So if we say is 25 Brix, what we're saying is this is 25% sugar. Or if we're saying this is 3 Brix, this is 3% sugar. This is when we speak in Brix. Now, it's useful in the winemaking. When we go out to the vineyard, we're looking for grapes to be at the optimum sugar level, or optimum Brix. We want to find wines that are the highest possible Brix when we harvest. Now, the reason for this is the higher the Brix is, the more alcohol we can turn to, or the sugar, and we can manipulate and play with it and do stuff like that. Now, California, for example, because of the climate and stuff, and here we go back to the French Terroir, because of the climates and everything, they can usually bring the grapes up to 25, 26% sugar. That's not unusual. In the Midwest, you're looking at probably 17, 18% sugar. Here in Florida, it's really hard to push 12, 13% sugar. So different areas will give you different sugars, or different degrees Brix when you pick those grapes. And then once you pick the grapes, let's take, for example, California. Most growers out there harvest around 20, 25 degrees Brix, which is 25% sugar, which when fermented will yield alcohol levels to around 11 to 14%. If you pick a wine that you don't want to raise the alcohol level, it's going to be sweeter. So, for example, if you pick a grape at 25% sugar or 25 degrees Brix, and you're making a white wine that you want to keep reasonably sweet, then you're not going to ferment all that sugar out of it. You're going to leave some sugar in it, or residual sugar in it. I just explained residual sugar. So therefore, the wine is going to be sweeter, but because you're stopping the fermentation before it turns all that sugar to alcohol, you're going to have a lower alcohol wine. So white wines typically tend to be on a lower alcohol level because of that. Red wines, on the other hand, usually aren't very sweet. The residual sugar in red wines is usually very low, just like I, told you just a little bit ago. Red wines, grams per liter, you're looking at, a very small amount of grams per liter, 2 grams or less. So the residual sugar is very low on red wines. So therefore, you're going to ferment. Therefore, you're going to ferment those wines longer, get more of the sugar out of it, which will in turn raise the alcohol level. So red wines tend to be alcohol.
Wow. Okay.
Makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah. Okay.
I had to stop and take a sip of wine there.
Sure. Lucky you, I don't have any.
I do, right before every time I open up a bottle.
Excellent.
So the Brix levels are measured throughout the fermentation process, the must, and into the finished wine. You constantly measure the Brix, to be sure. And, Brix is also used in other food areas, too. I mean, it's not just in wine. It's in beer, fruit juice, soft drinks, all monitored for the Brix level or the percentage sugar. And it's just a standard that's used. Whenever you're being in Florida like we are, and anyone else from around the country in different areas that might be listening who have fruit areas there, Brix, you test the sugar level or the Brix of the fruit to be sure that it is at an optimum level to be picked. So Brix is used for not just for wine, but it's also used throughout the industries to find out, like I say, in fruit juice, soft drinks, beer, everything. Brix is a common thread that ties everything together whenever you talk about that.
Okay.
Oxidation. The term oxidation actually it describes wine that has been exposed to air too long. Oxygen. It has been over-oxygenated or it is oxidized. Now, what this does, air is the enemy to wine.
Mm-hmm.
The more air is to the wine, the faster it's going to deteriorate. So you don't want too much air in a wine, but you do want a little bit in it, because when you pour wine out of a glass, you may have heard the term, why this wine is really closed up, it needs to open up. Well, to open up a wine, you let air to it. That's why you swirl the wine in the glass. You aerate it a little bit. But if you aerate a wine too much, it will oxidize. It will get too much air into it, and it'll oxidize. And what this does is it causes the wine to go flat, or even way too much, can cause it to be vinegary. It is not vinegar. It just becomes vinegary in the aromas and the taste.
Hmm.
Now, an oxidized wine will also turn, especially red wines, you can see a little brownish color to it. A good example, if you take an apple and you slice an apple, cut it in half, and set it on the counter and let it sit there for an hour, you go back, you'll see the brown, how it's turning brown around the edges and stuff. That's the same principle as wine. It's the air has gotten to it and it's starting to oxidize. It turns brown. Wine will do the same thing. You start getting this brown tinge to it, this brown edge to it. And so red wines, the same coloration takes place. White wines are more so than others. You'll start seeing the discoloration of white wine. Red wines, oxidation helps because of the tannins in the wines, and the tannins will help balance that out a little bit. There's a big debate over how much oxygen a wine should get. How much oxygen is going to be good for that wine? How much is too much for the wine? Does this wine need a lot of air? Does it need to age just a little bit? This is ongoing debate in the industry. It has been for years. Unopened or unfinished bottles of wine really should be limited to air, some sort of stopper on it. Putting the cork back in upside down, not a good idea. You could cause the wine, all the stuff that's in the top of that wine, on top of that cork, is now in your wine. So find some other closure. We sell some nice, what we call tip tops out at the winery that are great for that. But once you open a wine, red or white, to keep it from being oxidized, if you haven't finished it, refrigerate it and put some sort of closure on it so it is not exposed to air. And there's all sorts of different closures out there. Like I say, we sell the tip top. They have the pump the air out things. They have all this other stuff. I say no matter what type of closure you use, refrigerate it, drink it within a week, because that's really a good rule to follow. Any more than that, and the wine is going to start getting more and more oxidized. It's going to start getting too much air into it.
Okay.
And let's see. A couple other quick things here, and then I think I'm going to be done for the night.
Okay.
Botrytis. This is something that it's not a term that's used a whole lot. Botrytis is a dusty-looking fungus that affects grapes and many other plants. It does. It's not just grapes. It's on a lot of plants. It's a fungus that gets within the grapes and all that. Now, it's been said that every bunch of grapes has the botrytis mold in it. It may not be activated, but every bunch of grapes has the botrytis mold. It must be controlled. If it's not controlled, it could cause the grapes to go bad on you. I mean, really cause what they call a gray rot, which destroys the grapes. But if taken care of and done properly, it can give you some of the best, sweetest wines in the world. Germany, for example. German grapes are planted on the hillsides next to the three major rivers, Rhine, Moselle, and Danube. As wintertime comes, these rivers create a fog. And for those of you in different parts of the country, you know how that affects, with the temperature being high in the air and the ground being cooler, it gets this real heavy fog. That's what happens off the rivers in Germany. And this fog rolls up into the grapevines and into the vineyards all around by the rivers, and it activates this botrytis mold, this botrytis fungus. Actually, the full name, too, I don't think I said, is Botrytis cinerea. And botrytis is spelled B-O-T-R-Y-T-I-S, Botrytis cinerea, C-I-N-E-R-E-A. The moisture from the fog activates this botrytis mold, and the botrytis starts to suck the moisture out of the grapes. This is what it does. It lives off the moisture in the grapes. Now, if the Germans make a wine before the botrytis hits it, they call it a cabinet, K-A-B-I-N-E-T-T. It's just a nice, light, pleasant wine. If they wait until the mold starts being affected onto the grapes and make a wine right away, that's called a spätlese. If they wait until more mold is affecting the grapes, they shrivel up a little bit more, make a wine that's called an Auslese. If they wait even longer and wait until these grapes are starting to really swivel up and moisture is being sucked out by this botrytis, and you're taking chances that this botrytis is not going to just cause the grapes to go completely bad, they pick that, and this is called a Baron Auslese. If they wait even longer, these grapes are now looking like little raisins dangling down from the vines. And they literally do. I've seen them, and they look like little raisins that are dangling down from the vine, little gray, dusty-looking raisins. And they pick these and make wine out of this. This is called a Klackenbaren Auslese.
Oh, my gosh.
They decide to leave, big German words there. If they decide to leave the grapes on the vine and wait until a frost comes in, a freeze. Now, by German law, it has to drop below 26 degrees Fahrenheit, or about minus 2 degrees centigrade. If it drops below that temperature, then the grapes freeze on the vine. So these little raisins are now frozen, and so any moisture that is left within these grapes is now frozen. They pick these and they cold press these, and they get whatever juices out of that, which is just a nectar of almost honey nectar. and they make a wine out of that. This is called an ice wine, E-I-S-W-E-I-N. The United States and Canada make an ice wine, I-C-E-W-I-N-E, every year. They pick frozen grapes, and they make a wine, but it's not affected by botrytis. So it doesn't have the, in my opinion, I've had both, and in my opinion, it doesn't have the pure honey nectar taste that the German ice wines do. It's very good. Don't get me wrong. I thoroughly enjoy Canadian and Northern United States ice wines, but the German ice wines are just so much more character. There's a man in L.A. that makes an ice wine every year. He takes frozen grapes, freezes them in a freezer, and presses them and makes an ice wine, which, by the way, is legal so far. But there's botrytis doesn't just have to affect white grapes. It can affect any grapes. I've never tried it, but I have seen advertised a botrytis Cabernet Sauvignon, which to me is you know, definitely a contradiction of terms, because the Cabernet Sauvignon typically is very dry, but then you get a botrytis and you start getting that sweetness into it, and you're looking at a sweet cab. To me, I can't see how that would work, but and they were asking a lot of money for it, or else I would have tried it. But botrytis is if you're not careful, you can bring out a very uneven balance with the residual sugar and the acid in it, which could give you a very bitter finish. And this is one of the problems with botrytis, trying to make wines with it. But the a lot of grapes you can find, if you're looking for a wine that, if you're looking for something that's sweeter, always look on the bottle and see if it says a botrytis wine. And a lot of times they will tell you if it's a botrytis wine, and you can find them every once in a while. And surprising, some of the wines that you can find that have been left on the vine have been botrytis. Botrytis cinerea has been affecting the vines and sucking out the moisture and making for a sweeter wine. I've seen just all sorts of different wines that are botrytis, and I've tried very many different ones, and they are all delicious. So that's botrytis. That's what botrytis is. And I think that's going to do us for our odds and ends tonight.
Okay.
We now, will cover some more odds and ends at
okay.
another time.
I was, let's see, I've got a couple of questions. You know, you mentioned that when you were talking about the botrytis, the dusty fungus thing, and then you said they actually listed on the bottle. I don't know if that's something that I'd want to know, that it was, you know, I mean, not knowing, you know, how it works into the flavor. If someone put on a bottle that it's a botrytis wine, and then I go just happen to look it up, and I go, oh my God, that's a dusty fungus. What, you know, that would be a major turnoff. But knowing what you're saying, that, you know, what it can do and everything is now it's different. You know, it's okay.
Right.
You know,
it's referred to as the noble rot. Botrytis is referred to as the noble rot, because of its ability to turn wines into just a nectars, you know. So, yeah. But yes, I understand what you're saying there. That's true. It's, you know, not knowing what it can do to your wine, it can be scary. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, is this the same type of fungus that you see on the outside of bad strawberries? Because you said it affects other plants and everything. Is that because sometimes you see like this bluish gray looking moldy stuff on the outside of strawberries, or is that different?
I would guess that it's different, but I don't know. I don't think it's the same stuff. I'm not really a strawberry grower. That's an interesting question, though. I'll, next time people come in all the time, and I'll ask if anybody's a strawberry grower periodically, and if anybody responds, I'll say, by the way.
Yes.
You are listening to a special edition best of All About Wine. It is December the 8th, 2011. That show was from May 2009, and I want to thank you all for listening this evening. We've got just about a minute left. One more time, happy birthday to Florida Estates Winery. You want to be there this Saturday, for a special wine fest and birthday celebration.
This Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's a special event. Join us at the winery for Wine Fest and our 10th anniversary birthday celebration. There will be live music, cake, vendors, wine, cake, door prizes, and did I say cake? Bring the whole family and enjoy the celebration and a great day at the winery. It's Florida State's Winery's 10th Anniversary Birthday Celebration and Wine Fest. This Saturday, December 10th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. For more information, call the winery at 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridastateswines.com. See you Saturday.
That's right. Florida State's Winery, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52. That's exit 285. And we just went into, we're in the archive mode, and the show has ended. I want to thank you all for listening to us, in these, especially in this extended part here, the last minute or so, overtime. Hey, it's overtime. Okay. Thank you all for listening to the archives now and for the live show as well. And hopefully we'll see you all next Thursday. We still need to continue with Oklahoma, I believe. So let's see if we can get back on here live on December the 15th. December the 15th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. It's all about wine. Thank you all for listening, tuning in, and enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll see you all next time. Don't forget, follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. It's all one word, allaboutwinebtr. Go to Facebook, log in, go to that address, and like us on there, and you'll get all kinds of updated information as it happens. Ron posts in there quite a bit about what's happening on the show, and very interesting. Also visit their website, subscribe to the newsletter. That'll also be an indication as well. You'll pick up some information about wine and events that are happening at the winery, wine recipes, wine facts, and it's a good read. Very nicely done. So go to the website at floridastateswines.com and subscribe to their newsletter. They don't, bombard you with spam or anything. It comes out about every 2 weeks, usually before Wine Fest, and it's very informative, very good to read, and keep track of everything. So stay in the know. All right. On behalf of Ron and the All About Wine team of 1, 2, 3, 6, 12. Anyway, thank you all for listening again. And we'll see you next Thursday right here, Blog Talk Radio / All About Wine. Thank you.